Welcome to We Are the Watchers.
This is episode, I don't remember, but it is the Watchers Top 5 2025. Steph and Mick are back!
Yay!
Hello!
Mick, it's good to have you back again.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be back. How many years is this now? I feel like it's at least 5 years we've been doing this.
I reckon because someone was asking, like, oh, how long has Mick been doing the end of year? And I'm like, ages? I don't
Forever.
Know. Yeah, ages. So it's good that we're keeping the tradition going.
Oh, I love doing it. And I always keep track during the year. I have a little note on my phone
where I go through
and I pop things in so I remember.
That's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you kind of get to the end of the year and you only remember the last Christmas movie you watched before the Christmas night.
I actually had two lists going this year.
Oh, did you?
The list that of everything I watched, and then as something was really good, it went to my top five list.
Oh, okay.
And then if I wanted to add something extra, things got bumped off. So this has been a full year's work in progress.
Yeah. All right. I don't remember who went first last time, but let's go with Mick. We probably did the same thing, though, I reckon. Mick, what is your number five?
What about honorable mentions? Are we going to do those first?
Okay. Do you guys have them? Because I don't have any. I was so strict. Usually I've got about four honorable mentions, don't I? All right. What's your honorable mention?
I'm going to give you a completely guilty pleasure for my honorable mention.
Them.
And this is guilty as, but I fell into the trap again, 24 years after it was first shown on Australian TV. Can you guess what it is?
This is Big Brother.
Big Brother. Oh, yes, you got it.
Stop. That makes me feel like I'm 20 again.
So very guilty. There's a couple of reasons. First, I loved the very, very first seasons of Big Brother. The whole concept of it, of having people, cameras in a house, watching people 24/7, just the whole dynamic of it all was just such an exciting,
it was novel.
And it was real reality TV. You know?
Yeah.
It felt like something brand new we'd never, ever seen before.
Everyone was on board, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, totally. And now that I live on the Gold Coast,
yes.
It's been filmed down the road. I was like, oh, my God. I have to admit, I applied to be on Big Brother more than once.
Did you really?
And I never got on.
Oh. Did you apply for the first one?
I reckon it wasn't the first one, it was the second one. But I remember applying really, really early on. But you had to fill out like sheets
of
information. Like it was hectic. But I'm not afraid to apply for reality TV shows or game shows.
And you've been on game shows.
Back, I've done a few, which is fun. I think now that I'm a bit older, I don't think I could handle being on TV that. And I think it's too dissected by everyone. But anyway, I know it's just an honourable mention, so I won't go on about it. But yes, that was my little guilty honourable mention.
They'll probably do it again next year, I reckon. I feel like people.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They built a brand new house for it, haven't they?
They built a brand new house. Yeah. I think this is a bit of a trial season for it, the shorter one. But the host, Mel Trasina, who I didn't really know much about before.
I knew her face.
Brilliant. She's on the cheap seats on Channel 10 and fills in on Have You Been Listening, stuff like that. Not Have You Been Listening.
The other, Have You Been Paying Attention.
Yeah, that's right. But she was just a really, really good host. Like, you know, you compare her to Gretel Colleen, who did the original series.
Yeah.
And I just found like she was perfect for the role. So I think all that together, it'll come back.
Cool.
Honourable mention for you, Steph.
Okay, this is a really bad one, but I can't go past it because every time I think about it, it makes me giggle, cringe and shudder at the same time.
Triple threat.
It is, it's going to make me laugh just saying it out loud. It is Netflix doco. Well, it's the train wreck doco series, but it's about the one about poop crews.
Oh, I remember you watching that.
It's just so disgusting. I can't even remember what year it was now, but a cruise ship had a fire in an engine room and all of the toilets on cruise ships are electronic. They're all made very, very differently to land. And the fire affected the plumbing system, which essentially shut off every single toilet on, you know, something like a 4,000 person cruise. not only did it do that, it cut off all their navigation systems and their engines. So they were just floating in the ocean for 7 days.
It's too long.
With
too
no long. Toilets.
That's worse than Big Brother.
It's worse than Big Brother. And what made it worse, one of the funniest quotes from it, I think was from a chef, and he said people were, this is going to get quite graphic, they were pooing in toilets that didn't flush and will put a layer of toilet paper on to cover it. Then the next person would come in and poo on that and then cover it with toilet paper. And he said they were just making a poo lasagna in the
No.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. I mean, horrific for these people, because the sewage eventually started to just seep down corridors. There was no air conditioning, so people couldn't be in their cabins because it was unhygienic and hot.
Yeah.
It's a good watch. It's a fun watch.
Is it?
I mean, you're watching quite aghast. But then when you try to tell people about it, you can't stop laughing.
And it stayed with you. It stayed with you.
It stayed with me. And I thought, those poor people. But how did we never hear about it?
Yeah. I know, right?
So honourable mention. Okay. It really is not going to win awards, but it was a good bit of viewing.
A bit of an honourable mention theme going on, guilty pleasures. Yeah. Have you got any others? Any other guilty pleasure honourable mentions?
I do.
Well, we might come across one later.
Okay.
But just generally, I would mention documentaries.
Okay.
And none of these made my top five, but I just want to talk about John Candy documentary, Eddie Murphy documentary, and the most recent Sean Combs P. Diddy one. Mm. Three very sort of different documentaries.
Very different.
But I think it's been a year of sort of these celebrity docos a little bit.
Yeah.
There were some good docos this year. Mm-hmm. I was even thinking about, I'm going to forget the name, the high school catfish, and it ended up being that it was the mother. Spoiler alert.
Such a weird story,
right? So, some good docos. My other one that is honourable mention, we actually got season one and season two in 2025, and that's the show High Potential.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it's
Disney, right?
Disney show. It's
Hulu.
The only show that has come out, their second season came out with such incredible results and data that I think it beat like ER back in the day. Jeez. It was absolutely crazy for the time that it was released, the time of night that they were playing it.
Oh, okay.
It was just unbelievably a success for them. They have put season two on pause for the moment. It will come back Jan 5th, but it's a really fun, it's lighthearted, sort of, I guess, a detective. It's set in a police station, and the cleaner is one of those people who has those incredible minds that just remembers everything. And she, while she's cleaning the police department, solves a mystery and ends up getting hired as a consultant.
Brilliant.
So it's a good one. It's a fun show.
I know you liked it. I don't have any honourable mentions, so I'm going to crack into number five because I feel like I haven't contributed yet. Is that okay?
Oh, it's okay.
All right, there was a show on Netflix. It was a Spanish program called The Snow Girl, and it was about this main character. She's a journalist, and you follow her trying to solve a murder mystery whilst the police are also trying to solve it, and some missing girls, or a missing girl in particular. And there are flashbacks that she's experiencing. You know how flashbacks are like a big story telling
tool,
thank you, these days. But this was used in a more organic way. Like, she would have flashbacks of a moment and you could tell it was a traumatizing moment for her, and you're trying to figure out as the viewer, as the audience, is this related at all to this missing girl?
Mm-hmm.
And it had a couple of seasons. The first season was really good, and so was the second, because the second one kind of delved more into her trauma. But I would definitely, if you want to watch a murder mystery that maybe you didn't catch the first time round, The Snow Girl.
What's it on?
Netflix.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. Okay.
Is it Spanish subtitles?
Yes. Yeah. So I think I just, by default, it just had the dubbed version. Okay. So I just let that one run out. But you can of course, put it back to Spanish. Mick, five for you. Number five.
All righty. I'm going to get a little bit cheeky with number five.
Here we go.
Because, A, it's a movie. and B, it's a movie I saw two nights ago.
Ooh.
And C, it's a movie that I don't think anybody else in this room has seen.
Oh. You watched it in 2025, it counts.
It's the brand new Avatar, Fire and Ash.
So this is number three?
Literally, this is the third Avatar. Can you believe? Where were you in 2009, I ask, because that is when the first ever Avatar came out.
So long ago. That's crazy.
And it became the highest grossing movie of all time, the fastest movie to gross $1 billion. Mm. This was a massive thing when it came out, right? And I remember seeing it in 3D.
That's right. That was what, yeah, you watched it.
The little glasses on.
Yeah, that's right.
and we all get blown away. The special effects were just out of this world. You had Sam Worthington in there. And the storyline was sort of a environmental slash, you know, taking over humans destroying the world, all that sort of stuff. And we still are.
We haven't learnt from that first movie.
We haven't learnt. Has James Cameron learned in three movies now that, you know, people still want to see Avatar? We don't really know yet, because obviously it's not quite out. But yes, it's fresh in my mind, and yes, I'm still thinking about it. But I cannot get past the visual effects and the amazing action in this film. Like, I did watch it in IMAX 3D again.
Cool. Nice.
And you just when you get used to 3D after a while, it just looks normal.
At
the beginning, it's like, whoa. But when you start watching, you go, this has to be watched in 3D because it's made for 3D. And you've got things flying around the screen. You're going underwater, you're going over water, you're going around tree. Like, the effects are just out of this world. But I actually really just like the storyline. I really like where they're going with the characters. And I was just so sucked into the story again, even though it's been 3 years since the last one and I'd sort of forgotten things. Getting back into it again, I was just like, yeah, this is great. Avatar, bring it back.
So can you just give us a real quick synopsis for this one? Where are they up to?
If you watch the second one, Ways of the Water, it's about the flying. They were all up in the trees. They were living up in this, you know, and then they got basically attacked by the humans, who basically want to take over Avatar land, and then they get sort of pushed down into the water, and they join another clan who are down in the water. I can't remember their name, really confusing Avatar names, and they're all sucked down under the water, and you get to meet all of these amazing underwater creatures that they're using, flitting around, diving around, and I can't remember there's so many names and so many.
Oh, I wouldn't remember them either.
It's sort of like a Star Wars franchise. Yeah. It's like all these names you've never heard of before. So the third movie is sort of a continuation from the second one, that the sky people have come down to the water and they've collaborated. They're all buddies now, though. There was a bit of tension at the beginning, but they're all buddies. And the marine who was turned in – this is Sam Worthington, right?
Yeah.
Sam Worthington got it turned into a blue person.
That's right.
He is now part of the Avatar world, but his old mate marine that he basically turned his back on the Marines and became an Avatar, they want to get him for some reason. They really hate him. So they're – continually trying to find where he is and bring him back and, you know, hold him accountable being a traitor to the human race.
Yeah, right.
So there's a lot of back and forward of getting kidnapped, not getting kidnapped. Like, oh, no, they're long gone. Oh, no, they're going to lie. It gets a lot of back and forward. But the children, I guess his kids in the movie are just – they steal the show, and there is a human that, you know, was breathing through a mask and everything, and there's a whole new storyline there. There's a lot going on. And look at it's 3 hours and 17 minutes. So this is not
he does like movie. He likes a long movie. He does, doesn't he? Okay.
But I wasn't bored. And I didn't want to walk out. And even my wife, Julia, she didn't want to walk out. And I didn't tell her how long it was beforehand because I thought
that's
she'd
probably for the
out.
Best. Yeah. Probably why she didn't walk out.
She stuck through it all and we're like, wow, that Trooper. Was epic. So, yes, epic. Loved it.
All right, a good one for January. Steph, what's your number five?
My number five is The Thursday Murder Club.
Oh, that was fun. And yeah, that was good.
I struggled a little bit in my head as to whether or not I really loved it enough to be on the top five, mm-hmm. or if I loved it because I loved the books and I felt like it was a long-awaited start for this series.
Okay.
But I came back to the decision. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. It does differ away from the book. There are quite significant storylines that are skipped, which made me go, I didn't realize it was a movie. I thought it was going to be a series.
Having
watched it, I think it should have been a series.
I agree. And the main character had changed. So the main character in the movie was Helen Mirren's character, where it shouldn't have been.
Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. Mm. Yeah, they went with the big name.
Yeah, which I get why they made that change. But yeah.
But stellar cast, like the names you could just keep listing and listing and listing.
And they got the tone right.
They got the tone right. They got the humour right. There were just so many moments that you went, yes, that's exactly what I pictured in a book. It is a murder mystery, hence the name, the Thursday Murder Club. But what's different about it is it's a group of retirees who are living in a retirement, I guess, village housing
complex. Yeah, it's like a posh mansion, though.
Super posh, you know, self-sufficient apartments with a wing that has, you know, sort of more that respite care. It has these intricate relationships in there as well, and that idea of, you know, what you can achieve at the end of your life can be just as amazing at what you can do when you're, you know, young and arrogant in your 20s and 30s, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was really good. I enjoyed it, and I would, whether I'm alone in this, but I would like a second one.
Yeah, we'll see if it happens. Yeah. Did you end up watching it, Mick?
I haven't watched that one, and look, I think Helen Mirren has been doing some amazing TV, right? And I've still got to catch up. I haven't caught up on Mobland, which I hear she's amazing.
I haven't either. No, me neither. Seems a little...
And 1923, I think she's in two.
Yeah,
But Mobland is one that I think was should have been on my list this year. Everyone's been telling me to watch it, and I just haven't got to it.
Yep.
But I haven't caught up on Thursday Movie Club either, so I'll definitely.
It's fun. It's good fun. Now, you mentioned docos, and you mentioned the John Candy I Like Me doco, and I put that as my number four because, my goodness, did I enjoy that. Not only was it about a guy that he was massive. He was a massive Hollywood actor. He was in so many movies that as a kid you would watch, right? You would watch Uncle Buck. Yep. You would watch the vacation one, the one where they go on holidays, the summer summer one.
Vacation.
No, they go to on summer holidays.
Yeah.
And then the one with Dan Aykroyd where they go to another summer holiday, but in the woods. I can't remember the name of it right now, but there were just so many movies that he was in that we would just watch over and over and over again. But I didn't know him. I had no idea about the kind of person he is, his background. I didn't even know he's from Canada. Like, I had no idea. I just had no idea. And to learn that not only he had this, you know, really interesting upbringing, his father died of a heart attack at a very young age. I think he was about 35, I think his dad was. Mm. And that was always something that was a bit of a worry for him. But did you notice, Mick, that every single person that they spoke to, every single actor, every single whoever knew John Candy, they were like, he was such a nice guy. He was one of the best guys. Everybody they spoke to.
You don't get through a whole career with everybody liking him. No. And everybody liked him, and he sounded like he was just the funnest person to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Everyone said a good thing. I mean, I know you do docos where people are going to say good things about you.
Yeah, you choose certain people, though. Yeah. It's not the Sean Combs doco.
Yeah, that's right. But it made me walk away from it just feeling happy. I was just happy. It made me feel like, okay, not everybody in Hollywood has been a jerk.
Was it movie length or were there episodes?
No, it was movie length, wasn't it? I think it was.
It was movie length. Yeah. It was actually a little bit too long in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I felt like after about an hour and a half, like,
it was about enough. Wrap it now. Sure.
Like, it kept on going. But like, I think I loved it too. Like I said, it was one of my honorable mentions. And what I love is one of my favorite movies as a kid was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yes.
Classics. And the fact that they used one of the lines from that. Movie is like the title, and that bit where he goes, "I like me," is like, oh my god,
it's the bit that gives you shivers up your up your spine. It's so good. Okay, so you're number four, Mick.
Okay, well, this is grim,
a bit different,
sometimes hard to watch. But I got really sucked into it, maybe because I was a big fan of of Ozark back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
but Jason Bateman decided to do another TV show where everything just goes wrong, and this time it's all his fault. This show is called Black Rabbit, and it was on Netflix, starring Jude Law as Jake Friedkin and Jason Bateman was Vince Friedkin. Basically, they were brothers. They used to be in a rock band together. The band broke up, and never quite understand why, but there was reasons behind it, and probably Jason Bateman's fault. Pretty much everything in the show is Vince's fault. because it starts out with him doing something bad. He heads to New York City, goes and hangs out with his brother, who's got a really happening New York City like restaurant and bar, and it's just going off. But you sort of see the start of the show is about that bar getting held up. And you basically, it's one of those things where you rewind, I can't remember, a couple of months or something like that, to find classic out what flashback happened on the path to that. Yeah. And a bit like Ozark, you can see it all just falling apart. You know that this is not going to end well, but you get sucked in. You just want to see how bad it can get. And Jude Law and Jason Bateman, they don't look like brothers at all.
No.
But
that's what I was going to ask. I was like, do they have a brotherly chemistry? Because I haven't watched this one yet.
They sort of do. Like, they work really well on screen together. But they're both great actors, right? Yeah. So they did it really well. But yes, Jude Law is supposed to be the younger brother to Jason Bateman, but he acts like the more responsible one because basically Vince, Jason Bateman's character, is just a complete screw up. But Jake is not much better. It's a really cool dynamic and great to see them on screen together. This I think proves to me that Jason Bateman really doesn't want to do comedy anymore.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman loves gritty, hard to watch dramas.
Yeah.
I would love to see him do comedy again, but it feels like it's hard to see him now doing comedy because I've just focused on him being these really troublesome dramatic actors.
Ready to make the worst mistakes.
It feels like it's been a long time since we have seen Jude Law. Has he been silent for a while?
So what was the last thing I would have seen him in? Was it the Pope, when he played a Pope? That was ages ago, wasn't it? That was ages ago now. No, I would have seen him in something since then. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think it was a show called Eden. It was a film, actually, historical drama that came out, but I've never seen it.
No.
I can't even think of much TV that he's done, really.
He was the It guy.
Sherlock Holmes, that was a movie.
Yeah, yeah. True.
Mm. All right.
But, good stuff.
I did want to watch that, and I'm kind of, now that it's your number four, I think I will jump in. Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Steph, your number four.
The hotly anticipated, it was back then, The White Lotus Season 3.
Great. And I'm glad someone mentioned it.
I was like, was it really good? And I thought it was. What it made me do was think about it all week long until the next episode came.
Good sign.
And I thought, that's a really good sign. What I really liked about it were those undercurrent themes that they have had in the other past two seasons of White Lotus. But in their own right, you know, there were clues in the opening titles. They gave you the dead bodies in the very first episode.
That's what you want. That's what you want now.
And you spend the entire season going, that's it. They died. They did it. And you suspect every single character because every single character has enough of a reason and a motive, but you know it's not going to be what you expected. So you love the story and you love the roller coaster and you know the ending is going to shock you.
There were characters that unraveled, but the father, as he unraveled in that, the father of the three adult children, I loved that. He was every time he was there, he looked like he was going to pass out from his anxiety. It was like so full on, I could barely take it.
So much so he was stealing his wife's Xanax.
That's right.
The cast is really good. That was Jason Isaacs, who many of us would know from Harry Potter.
Yep.
Who is an English actor and did the most incredible Southern American movie.
It was
accent.
Brilliant.
It was so
English.
Good.
I was
really surprised to find that out as well. It was a perfect accent.
Really, really good cast again. They even casted, pop sensations from K-pop? Blackpink?
Wasn't it from Thailand?
For Thailand. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah. Set in Thailand. Yeah. That's why they put her in.
Was she from Baby Pink or something?
Yeah, Blackpink, I think.
Blackpink. Sorry.
Something like that. Yeah. Just really interesting casting choices.
She was great too.
That worked.
Yeah. Everybody.
Really worked. Phenomenal series. And I'm looking forward to the next.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm also looking forward to telling you my number three. Good segue?
I like that. That's good on you.
All right. Okay. this was a movie that had Pierce Brosnan, who was also in the Thursday Murder Club.
Yep.
Four Letters of Love. This starred him, Gabriel Byrne, Helena Bonham Carter, and it was set in Ireland. And you could be mistaken for thinking it was set in I don't know, the 1700s. But it wasn't. It was set in the 1970s.
Really?
Yeah, and there was just – it was really interesting the way they intertwined these two families who were very different in the one country, right, but very different, had very different trajectories that they – every person in those families took, and then somehow they all came together. I really – liked the fact that there were really heavy dramatic moments where you're like, oh my gosh, I never would have expected that to happen. What on earth is going to play out now? With some quiet, subtle, cozy moments as well, all rolled into one movie, Four Letters of Love. I feel like we didn't hear much about it.
No, I don't feel like we did.
But I thought if I put it on this list, maybe over January people will want to check it out. Mm-hmm. Number three for you, Mick.
All righty, we go on Australian.
Yes.
We are going with a couple of amazing creative people who have been doing things for many years, but they created that TV show, which way back in January. So I did say something that I just saw the other day, but I'm going right back to January, and this has been on my list since I saw it. It's called Optics.
Mm. Oh,
and
yeah.
It was on ABC, and it was starring Jenna Owen and Vic Zerbst, who haven't been known I've forgotten what they were known for. They've got like a production company that they've been running for years. My mind has gone blank, but they've been doing, you would have seen them on the feed back in the day at SBS. They used to do skits and things like that on before that for the ABC. And then when COVID happened, and they were actually working at SBS at the time, they were doing some really clever, I guess, stay away from each other little clips that they actually did internally.
I remember them.
But also, they went and did sort of promotional videos for other people. I think they did this really amazing clip for Adam Briggs for the Vote, the Voice, recently too. But they're just really clever at coming up with ideas and then creating them. So this show called Optics was like a 6-episode show, and it's about the optics of how to improve the optics of bad situations. So like a PR firm, basically they become the CEOs, just out of the blue, of this PR firm. And they have to have these clients, and they've basically got to restore the optics of these situations that these celebrities and rich people get themselves into. And so they're fabricating stories. Yeah. They're basically, it's very, very clever. But it's also about the company. It's about how they became the CEO. And it just brings in a whole lot of characters around them. Jenna Owen's name in the show is Nicole Kidman. That's funny to start with, because you know, naming yourself, your character, Nicole Kidman, and that's just a running joke for the whole thing. It's fantastic. Charles Firth is in this too. Charles Firth, you might know from The Chaser. He has done a lot of these economic stand-up shows. He's like a straight man, but he's really, really funny, and he writes along the story as well. He's like the guy that was supposed to be the CEO, but instead these girls became CEOs, and so he's like working with them hates being in the background. Really cool supporting cast, all Australian people like Alex Lee, Rhys Muldoon, Nash Edgerton. I think you even get Tom Cardy in there. Craig Rucastle.
Because they're friends, Michael I reckon. I'm pretty sure Tom Cardier, like they, I've seen them in some of his videos as well. I vaguely remember they did a Christmas movie for Stan last year about the dog.
And it was awesome.
Someone is dead.
Yeah. I can't remember that. Yeah, yes.
The dog is dead. The dog whatever the dog's name is. Yeah.
Come home, the dog is dead.
And their duo is called Freudian Nip. I was trying to remember what that was.
Yeah.
But yes, they did that. Christmas movie was really clever.
Yeah, it was good.
That's what I mean. They're just really good writers and creative thinkers. And I think they're just, I love that they keep on doing new projects.
Yeah.
I think Optics is going to get another season, I think, next year.
I hope so.
Because it was really popular. And it's been, I mean, I was, looking at a little few best of lists in the last week or two, and I saw this was in some lists, and I was like, oh, it's in mine too.
So cool.
I'm glad it was.
Nice. So number three on my list is a show, again, on Disney that is called Dying for Sex, and I'm really interested if either of you saw
it. No, but I remember you talking about it.
So it stars Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate, and it's only got a short maybe 8 episodes, and it's based on a true story of a woman who documented her terminal cancer through a podcast. And
Michelle played that character.
Michelle plays that character. There's not a lot of talk about the podcast itself in this series, but the rest of the story is based on the real woman. It is one of the most raw, gripping, emotionally, I want to say explosive shows I have ever experienced. It's draining. It has moments of being uplifting as well. And I don't think I've ever cried harder than watching this particular show. So the premise is this woman, while she's in couples therapy with her husband of 15 years, she gets a phone call from her oncologist to say that she has essentially stage 4 terminal cancer and only has a limited amount of time to live. She's already questioning her marriage and whether it's the right thing. So this phone call was the moment that she goes, you know what? I'm going to think about me from now on. Yeah. And it's not so much a bucket list, but it is a bucket list. But she's like, I want to have good sex and I want to experience everything. And it goes with no holds barred. It really is confronting with some of the sexual things that they do, but in such an interesting way that doesn't make you go all prudish and cringy or, you know, like a little bit porn-esque. It's none of that. It's just so gripping and raw with this woman's experience and the intricacies of the friendship where her husband, she no longer wants him really around, and it's her friend who had this carefree living life suddenly becomes her carer. And so their roles reverse and she has nothing to live for anymore than have this carefree, I guess, educational experience while her friend is learning how to be the responsible one and look after medical things. And, you know, people in her world and in her life still want to be in her world and in her life, but she's, you know, got these moments of this real selfish attitude where you kind of go, I can't blame you because look what you're going through.
But
at the same time, these people are already mourning you and you haven't gone. It's so raw. It's a really interesting
show. Isn't it funny? When you originally said that there was Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate, in my mind I went, oh, I can see those two as friends, even like off screen.
Yes.
Like I can imagine them being friends. They just seem like the type of people who would get on. So I think it's perfect casting.
It was really good casting. Also, I'll put it out there, if Michelle Williams does not win some awards for this performance, I will be shocked. She completely changed her body, her persona, everything that you're watching it, you really felt like she was at the end of her life and her body was giving up.
Full on.
Not an actor performing. Yeah, so cool.
Yes.
My number two is another Spanish program called Valeria. It's set in Madrid. It's, I think, oh, geez, I can't remember, maybe 4 or 5 seasons. I just watched them all like day after day, like a one after, it was a blur for me. It is, I think, Sex and the City sort of, but Spanish and modern day. So the main character, Valeria, she is a writer. And she's married at the time, at the beginning. Obviously, there's a lot of different relationships that happen for every character in the show. It's just light. It's fun. It's light. They do some really interesting things with the introduction, like the theme of every single episode. Amazing music, not just Spanish. They've got English, French, like a whole heap of different music.
Cool.
Really fun. Even though they kind of go through seasons, to me, in my mind, even though I didn't watch it in summer, it's a summer show.
Okay.
I would say watch it in January because it's got a lighthearted vibe to it. And I think in January, that's kind of what you want, right? You want something that will lighten your step. You've watched way too much cricket. You need to just do something
the
else.
Tennis stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The tennis as well. Valeria. It's on Netflix. Ooh,
I think Julia might like this.
Oh, she would love it.
For something that's not quite heavy, you know, when you want to have just something light that you don't have to really think about. And I've got to admit, I just had a look at the picture of the girl. There's like 4 girls, right?
Yes.
And one of them's got like curly hair. And
yes.
I'm just like, wait, is you're right. Is this the Spanish Sex and the
City? That's right. Exactly. That's exactly what you think. Yeah, exactly. one of the characters, actually Valeria, she's the redhead. She was in, I can't remember which season, maybe season 3 of Money Heist.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a few Money Heist people coming in and out because, you know, they were both filmed in Madrid, but it makes you want to go to Madrid. It makes you want to go.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, Mick, number 2 for you.
I feel like we're going to start getting into crossover territory.
Okay.
You know, I was too.
It's surprising. We've only had that John Candy one.
Yeah, but I don't know if you two have seen this one, but I really, really loved it. And it came out a couple of months ago, and it's called Film Club.
And yes, we talked I loved about it.
I haven't seen it.
I watched it in 2.5 Lotus. Days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. We're talking about lighthearted and nice to watch shows, and sometimes I find it hard to find shows that both my wife and I enjoy watching. But when I saw Amy Lou Wood had written a TV show.
I was in.
Of course, we know her from Sex Education and White Lotus this season. She just did a brilliant job with writing a really heartfelt story that focused on mental health but didn't make it all about it. Like it was a part of it. And, yes, it was an important sort of context there, but the relationships around that were really what did it for me. But also the way the concept being that they're watching a film in her garage with her and another guy and a couple other people every Friday night. And she would just do up the garage and just brilliant like decorations and make you feel like you're inside the movie that you're about to watch. So much so that I think she did Wizard of Oz and there's like the garden has got all yellow brick decorations and
aliens. Everything was
alien.
Aluminium
was amazing.
Foil everywhere. That's right.
Just a really, really cool, and I think it was only 6 episodes.
But yeah, it wasn't many.
Beautifully, beautifully written show. Really nicely, sort of like the colors and the house and the sort of the aesthetic of the whole show was a little bit retro. It was sort of set, I think, in like suburban England, London somewhere. But really, really, the house and the furniture, everything just seemed really retro.
It didn't have a lot of characters, but it didn't need a lot of characters.
Amazing. I'm so impressed you wrote it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she wrote it with a guy called Ralph Davis. I don't know who that is. It does have another actor in there who we might talk about soon, young Owen Cooper. And the boyfriend in the show was Adam Long, who's actually her real life boyfriend that played I didn't know that until today either. Really beautiful, beautiful show. And it just goes to show that Amy Lou Wood, I think, can do no wrong now.
Yeah, for sure.
And you get the feeling that whatever she does next will just be, you know, popular again, whether she's writing or acting or I think she even does theatre and stuff like that.
I can see that. Yeah, yeah. All right, number 2 for you, Steph.
My number 2, and I'm be surprised if it's not on somebody else's list. It's on almost every best of 2025 list. I reckon we might have our number ones exactly the same, Mick, but my number 2 is The Pitt.
Massively popular series. Award-winning.
Walked away with so many awards. I vividly remember watching this first episode, and I didn't watch it the week it came out. You know, I was a little bit behind, but I watched it and I just thought, oh my goodness, this is incredible. And I know TV's sort of having a little bit of, I guess, a retro moment where they're heading back to sort of the older ways of making TV and doing that storytelling. And The Pitt touches in on that in that it has those sort of that idea of 24 where every episode is a different hour. So this Pitt, every episode is an hour of one shift in an emergency department in a Pittsburgh hospital. And you watch the first episode, not quite clocking that, and the second and the third episode starts and you go, oh, my gosh, like they've done so much and they're only at 8 a.m. in the morning. Like these guys have only just started. You know, that young doctor has been vomited on 4 times. You know, and he's only been here for 45 minutes. It stars Noah Wiley, who is from the ER fame.
Mm.
He is incredible stepping back into a doctor role. But I think what makes this show better than any of the other medical shows is that they worked with real doctors, real ER doctors, and their training and their preparation was you learn how to unwrap that medical equipment. You learn how to use it. You learn how to pronounce everything. And a lot of it is done in quite long takes. So it was choreography. It was absolute precision choreography with not just movement, but script, yeah, extras. It was phenomenal, and I am desperate for season two.
And I remember when they announced season two, it was a big deal. Like, it was, yeah, a big deal, like old school TV was, yes, when you would hear that, yeah, you know, season two was coming of one of the top shows. And along the lines of ER, I remember at the time ER got a lot of praise for being quite medically accurate as,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the medical accuracy is one thing. And I have seen on social media, I follow some ER doctors just because they're interesting. And they have said, this is the best show I've ever seen. I cannot fault them on anything. But despite the medical accuracy as that aspect, the storylines for the characters doesn't feel like it's been done before.
Mm.
Yeah. That's my number two. It was so close to
I've
being
number really
one.
I've been really wanting to watch this, and I haven't yet because I don't have HBO. but I it feels like that would be a good reason to get it. And everyone's been,
yeah,
praising this show. And
even
I love
if you
ER
did a free trial. Don't tell us.
Yeah, yet. Maybe you
did a free
do
trial.
That.
Binge that and then cancel it.
Yeah, it's a good,
yeah,
idea.
Good idea.
Really worth it. Really,
it's
really
the fact
worth
that,
it.
That Noah Wiley's in this, and he was such a big character at ER. Was that like the really big, like, did that suck people in, you reckon, to make
reckon
people
it did.
Think it's like a sequel to ER?
Yeah, a little bit think. It did kind of feel like this sequel, like, has he just grown up,
yeah,
and we're catching this character up? But no, it's a completely different character. But I have heard that George Clooney was like, if Noah will invite me back, like,
I'll be
to
here,
do the pit,
be
I will do the pit with him.
So maybe that will happen in season two.
Yeah, cameo.
We're keeping it a secret. Awesome. All right, drum roll. My number one is the series adaptation of the 1981 film Four Seasons.
Oh, really? Okay.
Tina Fey, Steve Carell.
Amazing.
I've got opinions. Please,
oh,
go.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, for starters, Tina Fey's in it. And watching it, I remember I must have watched the original Four Seasons years and years ago. I was probably sick from school and it was the midday movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I remembered it enough to have a vague recollection of what was going on, and then to have the season for the Four Seasons be a series with Steve Carell being serious Steve Carell, which he sometimes is. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Why? What are your thoughts? Why are you?
I don't want to stop you. I don't want to. This is your number one.
No. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Vivaldi music in it. I love the fact that there are seasons. It reminded me of Stardew Valley, and
and Vivaldi.
And there were key plot points that I just didn't remember from the movie originally, because I reckon I wouldn't have seen it for 30 years. Things took me by surprise.
I'm curious because I think I watched the first two episodes.
And you weren't into it?
Like, it was interesting. It was fun. But I obviously wasn't hooked enough to keep me in. So now that you're saying that it was the thing that topped it for the year, I'm almost wanting to go back.
Look, it was a toss-up, to be honest with you, between that, John Candy, and Valeria. I kind of moved them around a lot whilst I was fine-tuning this top five. But yeah, I thought I just enjoyed the fact that these are people who have acted together for years, a lot of them, and you can tell, especially when they're playing a married couple like Will Forte or Fort, it's just Fort and Tina Fey, and Will is the Alan Alda character, but he plays it very different, because why would you play Alan Alda? Like,
yeah,
you've already got Alan Alda to be Alan Alda, so don't be Alan Alda.
And he doesn't need to be anybody else.
He doesn't need to be anybody else. Yeah, exactly. So what were your – I'm intrigued, Mick. I'm very intrigued. I need to know.
I really wanted to like this, and I got highly recommended by someone at work, said, you've got to watch this. It's the best show ever. I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And I just found myself really struggling to like any character in that show. And I didn't really care what happened to any of them.
Yeah,
I like Tina
fair.
Fey. I love Tina Fey. She's amazing. But every character for me just felt a bit annoying, and I didn't love some of the dynamics that they had, and some of the storylines to me were just a little bit labored.
Sure.
Look, the cast was amazing, and I really wanted to like it. I sort of battled through it and went, it's done. It's okay.
It wasn't great. Do you think that those storylines were a bit labored because it was a adaptation of a movie where those storylines would have been done a lot faster? Do you think that they drew it out too long? Is that what you reckon?
I think they did drag it out. Yeah, I mean, it could have even been done in 4 episodes rather than 8.
Yeah.
I think it probably would have been just as good. Mm. And there were some really funny bits, don't get me wrong. I thought Steve Carell was great in some bits, and then other bits was terrible, and then Tina Fey similarly. Like, there were some really good bits, and then just other bits that, for me, sort of ruined the bigger bath. So yeah. I did consider this show a little bit, but then I was like, no, it wasn't really my favorites. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So what was your number one?
Well, it's number one everywhere. It is the best show of the year. It's the best show that's been made in many, many years. And it's 4 episodes. So not much going on. Adolescence.
Yeah. That was my number one too.
That's fair. It's totally fair.
It's for me just a masterclass in filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Of course, every episode is filmed in one continual shot. So that's one of the big things you need to know about the show, obviously. But the other part of the big part of the show for me is the topic and the really way that it tackles the toxic teenage masculinity that is going on around the world. And it's heartbreaking. It's really hard to watch at some points. And there's an episode, I think it's episode 2, where they're just in... Oh, maybe it's 3, where the psychologist and the boy, played by Owen Cooper, are basically in a room the whole episode.
Yes.
And it is intense and it's constantly and the way this kid, Owen Cooper, I think is like, what, 14 or 15?
Yeah, very young.
Filmed, like the way he can hold the attention of you watching it and the way that he would get angry when he needed to, he would back off when he needed to.
And manipulative when he needed to.
I couldn't believe how this kid could act so amazingly and in one take, one constant take, just suck you into a full-length episode. Written by Stephen Graham and Jack Thorne. Stephen Graham's brilliant in it, of course. They've won awards aplenty.
Yeah,
It's easy to sort of pick for me as my best favorite show of the year because I've never seen anything like it before.
You're absolutely right. It was a total showstopper. It caught your breath from the moment it started. And you almost didn't breathe again until the end of the episode.
And so different.
So different. And what an undertaking, you know, to pitch that story and then say, well, we're actually going to do it in one take.
Yep.
And every single extra has to be planned and prepared and drones used.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, clip the camera onto a drone without making it look clunky.
Yeah, the behind the scenes stuff was awesome to watch as well.
How they had the drone would take the camera up and over the top. Like,
so good.
You could see where they were looking at the crime scene from the school. Like,
yes. Anyone involved in that production deserves every accolade that they have received.
That's right.
The second episode was in the school, I think. And somehow they got all these kids to be where they had to be. And sometimes the shot would spin around and some of the cast, I think, were pretending to be kids or other.
Yes, you're right. Some
show.
Of the crew were pretending. Yeah.
Had to. where are you going to hide them? Hide them in the extras.
just a phenomenal, phenomenal.
Definitely.
Production.
Mm.
Like the top of 2025.
What an interesting year it's been. Like looking at these top 5, like 15 or so different things, we've got some funny stuff, we've got some serious stuff, we've got some smelly stuff. Yeah, no, I feel this might be one of the most varied ones we've done.
Yes.
Don't you reckon?
I think so too. Really
good.
And the stuff there that I'll definitely pick up and watch.
Same.
This is what I love every year. I go through and hear your recommendations, both of you, and go through and watch them at the start of next year.
Yeah, that's right. Mick, it was really good not only doing the top 5 again, but just hanging out and having a chat, catching up.
Yeah.
It was good fun.
So good to catch up with you both, and I love the show. I love that the podcast kicks on, and I love that you're always
never stop
for all of us. It's the best. So keep doing it
until next year.
Until next year.
See you in 2026.
Happy New Year, T-Bone.
Happy New Year.